Radio 4. And now, at 9:45, it's time for Anthony Smith to take another one of his sideways looks.
Good morning. The best things in life, so they say, are free. In which case, carrying on with this general sentiment, the second best things are cheap and the very worst things are quite the most expensive. Which all provides a suitable text for a discussion about transport, and about London's transport in particular. I appreciate that how Londoners get about is somewhat parochial and of dominant interest mainly to them. But most people pass through London sooner or later, and so most people will be affected by its system of transport. It's also very relevant to a good many foreigners, and there are times and days when the voice of a Londoner along, say, Oxford Street almost takes you by surprise, just as it does when you suddenly hear it deep in some foreign land. But back to London transport, whether it's used by visitors from overseas, or from Britain, or by Londoners themselves. As of Monday, October the 5th, a new set of fares was introduced for both the buses and the underground. In general, the price of a ticket is now less than it used to be. The actual cost of running the trains and the buses hasn't come down, and what has happened is that the price of a ticket is now shared between the person who buys it and the ratepayer. If the ticket has been slashed, as the saying goes, from 40p to 30p, that 10p difference will now be added to the rates. So the fares aren't any cheaper, it's just that we pay them rather differently. In some parts of London, where the rates are highest, the house owners will be taxed another £150 a year. In all parts of London, the extra household tax to subsidise transport will be at least £50 a year. In short, let's stop calling it free, which is what old age pensioners do, who have in effect paid for it in their working lives. And let's stop calling it cheap, the word bandied about of late by the transport authorities. And instead, let's wonder how on earth it can be so expensive. The fact that you can now hop on a bus for 10p if you're travelling to the next stop when it used to be 12p is merely 2p extra for the ratepayer. So far as London transport is concerned, that is a 12p ride. From Fulham to Baker Street, about 3 miles, used to cost 70p to the passenger. And it's that kind of sum which is so worrying. 70p for queuing for a bus, waiting for one to come, climbing aboard, having a not particularly comfortable ride, and getting there slower than every other vehicle on the road. That's a lot of money for a 3 mile ride. I agree that everything costs a lot of money, particularly if you were born in those medieval times when even a penny would buy you something, such as a gobstopper, 1 water ice, 4 tree-bore blocks, or a bus ride. But let's make some comparisons with taxis, for example. I once knew an old lady, well equipped with cash, who thought that people meant taxis when they referred to public transport. But for most of us, a taxi is a form of private transport for the time that we possess it. Such a vehicle stops at our request and is much more comfortable and gets along far faster than a bus and actually takes us to the very doorstep of our destination. The taxi meter seems to have a mind of its own, clicking up at random, but apparently the first 50p shown takes you for 708 yards. Thereafter, each 10p takes you another 354 yards. A clock is also ticking away, which can add more money to the fare if you're stuck in a jam. But that only becomes noteworthy if the driver cannot maintain an average of some 6 miles an hour. Putting this all together, it means that your own private vehicle, temporarily private, but private nonetheless, will take you for 3 miles and be warmer and carve up everyone else in sight and give you a running commentary on life, politics or marriage and get you to the very spot for £1.80. That's just 2.5 times as expensive as the bus. Should you have a couple of friends who wish to make the journey with you, the taxi driver will add on 20p for them, making the journey cost £2, and therefore less than 3 bus fares would do. No one goes about saying that taxis are cheap, save for taxi drivers, But it is odd that a system of one man driving one hackney carriage with seats for up to four people is charging a sum that's on a par with the bus fare, where one man and one conductor are in control of a vehicle that can take 12 times as many people. Which all makes me think that rickshaws wouldn't be such a bad idea. Fairly silent, pollution-free, labor-intensive, they could charge slightly less than a taxi, owing to lower speed, and more than a bus, owing to their greater comfort and doorstep delivery. Let's say 6 miles an hour is possible for the younger, slimmer rickshawist, in which case he could charge and earn, say, £3 an hour, and have no maintenance to speak of. Of course, he and his kind would fill up the road a bit, but many a bascuer waiting for the next convoy of number 11s would be very happy at the sight of a flag-up rickshaw coming his way. There could also be sedans for the wealthier kind of traveller, wanting to get from Harrods to Montpellier Square with the week's groceries. There'd be even less maintenance than for a rickshaw, but with two drivers, a sedan could charge, say, the same as a taxi, making it just 3 times as expensive per mile as a bus. Considering the special treatment to the passenger, individual care, smooth ride, I assume, door-to-door delivery, a threefold hike in the fare would not be unreasonable. And what about subsidy if buses, if noisy, smelly, inconvenient, rare and expensive buses are to be part paid for by the rates? Shouldn't clean, quiet, helpful rickshawists and sedanners, too puffed to tell you of their politics or marriage, shouldn't they have a slice of the cake? Anyway, on now to the underground, to the foulest transportation system of them all. Not improved one jot in all the years I've known it, save for a few more miles of warren to walk in, more machines to be labelled out of order, and amazing lock gates which let you through, but then grip vice-like and unyieldingly onto any bag you're carrying. 20p a mile is the current price, paid partly on the rates and partly when you eventually reach the ticket office window. It would even be a rough deal if they paid you 20p for each packed, head-cocked, umbrella-stabbed, much-jerked journey of a mile. As it is, the extreme discomfort is far more expensive per mile, even than a plane ride. A plane ride is not everyone's idea of heaven, but at least you get a seat, you get service, you get food, there are toilets, and you can order drink. Concorde to New York costs just over £1,000, which makes that most awesome gas guzzler of them all, a Mach 2 machine, a worldwide symbol of extravagance, just twice as expensive per passenger mile as the London Underground. But it is possible to fly across the Atlantic at half the speed of Concorde and a fifth of the cost per mile of the London Underground. It's always difficult keeping pace with the cost of an airline ticket, but the current standby or cheap fare across the Atlantic is about £100, or some 30 miles to the pound. No one can say that the planes themselves are cheap, that pilots are cheap, that maintenance is inexpensive, and all the trappings of air traffic control and runways and terminals don't cost a lot. But at the end of all that, it's still cheaper by far and per mile than either the London Underground or the London Bus. So where are the movies on the Underground, and the food trays, the friendly service, the offer of drinks, or even the information when your train stops and stops and then sits in a tunnel as you strap hang and remember that even standby gets you a seat on a plane? It is difficult, in my opinion, to understand quite why the mass urban transport system is so expensive. There's talk of overmanning, but an underground train only has a driver and a doorman, and is often carrying as many or even twice as many as a jumbo jet. The platform isn't overladen with staff to help you on your way, and one individual shouting, "Mind the gap," is about par for the course. Most of the tunnels were built a long time ago and must have paid off that investment. As for new spending, well, there's the Jubilee line and those nice murals at Charing Cross. But what else? Apart from being savaged by the entrance gates, what other change would a commuter of 50 years ago notice today? Say for a different class of rubbish, Arabic graffiti, more exciting ads, and fewer trains. So what's the rickshaw equivalent for the underground? You can't expect humans to run like pit ponies through those dark satanic holes, but I suppose there could be buses of a kind. Instead of 200 tons of train at a time being hurtled into each station, there could be single carriages for the non-peak times, far less heavy, less demanding on fuel, and supplying far more regularly the needs of the off-peak traveller. But, hey presto, I've invented the bus, which even on the surface is just about as expensive as a train underground. The urban bus is, whatever the reasons, an expensive item. It costs you tuppence a mile to go by bus to Edinburgh, but only those individuals long or absent in tooth can remember a tuppenny ride in London. But bus economics are a bit of a mystery. For instance, did you know that a bus ride costs 22p per mile in Hertfordshire and Bedfordshire, 23p per mile in Surrey, Essex and West Sussex, and 24p per mile in Bucks, Berks and Kent? But back to the underground and to its inhuman system. Isn't that the answer, I wonder? No one can pretend that we're treated like human beings down there. If animals were so compressed, there'd be an outcry. So let's forget that anything like humanity is involved, as London Transport itself realized such a while ago. We can't beat them, so let's join them. Let's consider ourselves as uncomplaining baggage, and therefore see the problem with new eyes. I've often envied the ease with which my suitcase reaches the plane. I have to queue, walk, find an escalator, be searched, wait, listen, and walk for an age before getting on board. It, my case, just sits on a moving rubber platform and gets there speedily, correctly, and effortlessly. And how do miners get their coal from coal face to pit head? It can't walk, and so it speeds along on a moving belt. And what's wrong, I ask, and of London Transport in particular, what's wrong with a moving belt? The escalator could become a travelator, as I believe they're called, and in a continuous flow, we'd get to the other end. Factories talk of flow systems and batch systems, and plainly the batch system has failed in the underground. Of course there'd have to be a system for changing lines, and the infirm and very young would have to be catered for. But even an ordinary travelator goes at 6 miles an hour, and that's a whole lot faster than just standing on the platform and waiting some more, and wondering whether they've economized completely and taken off the trains. The geniuses who built the Concorde must now have time on their hands. So what about a subsonic look at the London Underground and how to move human bag and baggage from A to B? They can do it with coal, so why not with us? The problem must be minute relative to superheat at 50,000 feet. And if they do it well, which I'm sure they could, then, who knows, local government might even think of taking money off the rates instead of always adding it. And London's transport system might again be the envy of the world. Good morning.
That was Anthony Smith. And he'll be back at the same time next week to take another of his sideways looks.